Everyone can make little changes to waste less. And at McDonald's, we're no different.
Like reusing our old cooking oil to make biodiesel.
That helps fuel my truck.
Or recycling my used McCafe cup at McDonald's.
To make a birthday card for me. Thanks, Dad.
It's the start of a plan to recycle and reuse even more. Because we know when you change a little, you change a lot. Search National Cup Recycling Scheme for more information on McCafe Cup Recycling at over 1,000 restaurants.
Hey, it's Herbert. And you're listening to the About Last Night podcast, you slippery little son of a bitch.
Cans on.
Remember when cans was a term for breasts? You could turn me up in the headphones a little bit, too.
Yes, I can.
Cans. It's also a term for jail. Singular.
Oh, yeah. You're in the can.
You're in the can. Get tossed in the can.
Toilet as well.
Yeah. The cans. The toilet.
What was your favorite term for... You know, like, I had a boss, Dan Boyle, when I worked at Albertsons bagging groceries.
Yeah.
And he'd go... Every week, it seemed like he had a new way to describe... Bosoms, which was another one.
Right.
He'd say Bajumbas, which I thought was like some sort of Mario villain.
Right.
Cans, which I'd heard before, I think, in the movies. I feel like I'd heard Tom Selleck say it to like Kim Basinger.
Yeah.
And then, what did I say? Jumbalas? Things like Jumbaloo. He had like a weird, they sounded like Jungle Book characters almost.
Yeah, sure. I think that was one. I think it was a puma. Yeah.
And then at one point he just was like, look at those big fat titties. And I was like,
yikes.
Yeah. I was like, hey, Dan, I'm 15.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't even seen these live yet. So if you can kind of.
Yeah, just the way he was so descriptive about them and passionate, it could get a young boy your age.
Excited.
In trouble,
yeah.
Yeah, could get you excited. And
in trouble for being too excited.
Yeah, and that was probably, back in the early, late 70s for you.
He was 70. I was 15, which made it even
spells
weirder.
Spells even more trouble, yeah. Oh, boy.
Good to see you, Har.
You too. What a treat.
This is a great day. What's on your hat there?
It's probably the, is it the Punisher?
Looks like.
Is it the skull?
It looks like.
Yeah, that's the Punisher. It's a Marvel character.
Let's just get into it.
Okay.
The last movie I saw with Harlan Williams was Marvel Endgame.
Oh, it was?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I know. You see a lot of movies.
Marvel Endgame.
And remember, they cried. Everyone cried.
Oh, yeah.
The first 35, 40 minutes of the movie, we're looking at each other like, do we walk?
Yeah.
We walked out of Johnny English.
Yeah.
We walked out of another one I can't remember. Which that's on you, movie, for not being memorable, even for the walkout. But they every 2 minutes, Hulk was working at an AT&T. That threw us off. Remember
Hulk,
that?
He had a turtleneck sweater and designer eyewear, like designer prescription glasses.
Yeah,
it was the worst.
It was tough to get through.
They destroyed what superheroes and supervillains are. Yeah,
I just want action. I want hot action.
Yeah,
right out of the gate.
Yeah.
Can something happen in a movie that makes you go like, oh, this, like you have a few minutes to really right the wrong here? Like, do you remember ever seeing a movie? Because you now, I feel like, you know, have such a, you know, distinguished palate for films, right? You feel like you can know if you're going to like it or hate it early on.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
The best surprises is when you think you're going to hate it and you're starting to hate it and then it goes around a corner and you're like, oh, wait, I'm starting to like this.
Yeah.
But the problem with superhero movies is now it's like every plot line has to be some maniacal villain that's trying to not just like, you know, blow up a building or, you know, knock out the subway.
Yes.
But he's trying to destroy not even the planet now, but the galaxy. Like they're trying to annihilate everything that ever existed, every molecule. And so each movie, the stakes just get higher and higher to the point where they're going to be destroying realities that we don't even know exist.
Yes. It's just to come up with plot lines.
Yeah, it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And these heroes, and I don't mind the guys like Iron Man and the Hulk who are kind of got these exoskeletons and they're strong. But then you throw in the Archer, who's got, you know, Robin Hood's bow and arrow. And then you got the Black Widow, who all she knows is some karate moves, and she rides a motorcycle. She doesn't even have Venom like a Black Widow. she rolls and kicks.
That's an easy move. If she's Venom, have her maybe a bite,
or something.
She shoots Venom.
Something, yeah, but she's just a girl in Lululemon workout clothes.
That has a yellow belt in Taekwondo.
Yeah, and she's rolling around and kicking monsters 78 feet high made out of, you know, metals from distant galaxies that a nuclear weapon can't penetrate, and somehow she can roundhouse them in the throat and take them down with her Calvin Klein boots. You can't even watch these movies anymore.
You're already being asked to suspend your disbelief. But like, come on, man. Meet me halfway.
Yeah.
It's almost like when Extra used to do this thing called rumor control, where they would basically, like, you just talk about heightening the world so big to where it's like not even believable just to have something for people to follow. It's like we've ran out of narratives that are like, so we're just creating these bigger storylines that are so impossible that it's like, I can't even get on board with that.
Yeah.
Extra used to do this with rumor control where you could tell they were thirsty for stories and headlines. So they'd be like, extra, extra, rumor control. Was Tom Hanks seen at a Chuck E. Cheese doing lines of Tylenol PM off Lindsay Lohan's butt crack?
Whoa.
And then they'd go, by the way, your reaction was everybody at home watching when they heard that.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Oh, God.
Hanks is in a tizzy.
Oh,
so
golly.
So then they'd spread this rumor out, and then they'd go, our extra rumor control got to the bottom of it, and no, he was not.
Well,
and you're like,
waste.
Obviously. But they just needed some filler, something to kind of get the gossip train moving. So they'd make up bullshit and then go, don't worry, we got to the bottom of it and cracked the case.
Yeah. And well, what's worse about these movies is that they're making the plot lines so huge. Like I said, they're making them so almost God himself couldn't stop the destruction coming.
Yes.
But what they've also done, they've also gone the wrong way with the superheroes, where they've made them like you're watching an afternoon soap opera, where they're crying, they're talking about their inner feelings, they don't want to fight, they're coddling their children. They're
thinking about retiring.
Yeah, it's like what the hell? They've got everything's ass backwards. It's horrible.
I'm surprised they haven't made a Captain Planet movie yet. Like a true, like Captain, like remember the Planeteers?
No, I don't remember the Planeteers.
It was like Earth, Wind, Fire, Water.
That's a band, bro. That's a band.
There was a cartoon.
No, that's a soul band. And I think, what's next? Barry White is the next Superman? Where are you going, guy?
Watch your mouth.
Watch
I've been
dare
trying
you.
To petition for that for years.
Are you serial?
Yeah.
God.
Harlan, you have so many... You have so many skills in your arsenal.
Thank you.
One
in my quiver. That's what
in
the,
your quiver.
The bow and arrow thing's called a quiver.
Nice. That's who was the actor? Jeremy Renner. Yeah. Who was like, don't worry, I'll take out this 900-pound beast.
Yeah. A titanium robot from planet whatever.
I got it.
I got a stick with a sharp thing on the tip of it.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. There are these videos I was perusing through your Instagram a little bit ago. I forgot how, like, the sketch world is something, I guess, because maybe I haven't seen you in, like, a full-on sketch show, and I know you as comic, actor, show creator, voiceover, you know, but, like, you had this sketch on your IG. I'm just going to play part of it into my phone. Do you mind?
Okay, sure.
It was one of the funniest things I've seen in a long time, and it made me... I've really gotten into Tim Robinson's sketch show on Netflix, I Think You Should Leave. I don't know if you've ever watched any of it or heard of it.
Oh, I've seen one episode.
I think you
really
dig it.
Very quirky. Yeah.
But you have this fucking character. Oh, man. Is Instagram down? I haven't been able to log on to it in the last 3 hours.
I'm on. Sad. You want to use mine?
Do you mind?
No.
Was that ever something in your just comedic journey where you were like, thanks, doggy, where you were like, was it like sketch, stand-up? Obviously growing up around a lot of, prestigious sketch people, right? I'm sure you're an SCTV fan, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, I loved it.
Did that, was that ever like a path that you were like, oh, I want that to be what I do when I get to L.A.?
Yeah, it was definitely in my wheelhouse. Yeah, yeah, it was something, and I auditioned for a few sketch shows, and at one point I auditioned for SNL and things like that, and I even wrote and produced a couple of pilots, sketch show pilots that got made.
Oh, wow.
And that, I think the character you're looking at is from one of the pilots. Okay, I think good. You're,
I think you know.
I think I know where you're going with Ernie Chiles, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hi, Ernie Chiles here with our amazing new product for your car, the brand new crotch feeder. Here we go. We all know how hard it is to eat and drive at the same time. Look out. Here we go. Oh, boy. Taking your hand off the wheel is a dangerous thing. Oh, boy. Here we go. Well, now there's a new safer way to eat when you're on the run. Look out. Here we go. Crotch feeder fits through any fly, flap, or front door
it's a prosthetic hand.
Trousers, or knickers. Look out. Just strap it in, get in your car, and leave the feeding to us.
The hand
delicious.
Is feeding him a burger.
And my hands never leave the wheel. Oh, boy. Here we go. And if you order now, we'll throw in our magic nose-picking finger. Here we go.
The noise.
Look out. That's a $15 value. A fabulous new crotch feeder. Order yours today, and we'll throw in our patented flip-off finger for free.
Oh, dude.
Yeah, he's a fun character.
Yeah. Oh, my God. The wig, the voice is, like, just enough inflected from your regular speaking voice. So funny, dude.
Thanks.
And that quirky type of, like, running back the, oh, boy.
Oh, here, boy. Look here, out. Here we go. Here we go.
Man, so funny.
Yeah, I'm actually getting ready to shoot some new ones of him because people really like him. Yeah.
Thank God.
Yeah.
So you found these and then just put them up as like throwbacks and then...
I had, you know, I shot three sketch show pilots like from top to bottom.
Oh, wow.
Like fully produced. Like they're actually quite good.
I'm sure.
And for some reason or other, they never got picked up or bought. There's a lot of things that never make it to air that are really done well.
Yeah.
And I was going through some of my old footage, and I was like, gosh, these are really fun, and why don't I just put them up? Now we live in this world where we can throw them up on Instagram.
Yeah.
And
give them new life.
Yeah, you know, give them not even new life, like life, period.
Yeah.
And so things that probably never would have got seen, you know, ever now get a shot. And so these little sketches are perfect, and so I've been putting them up, and they've actually inspired me to shoot some new ones.
Awesome.
Because they were, I remembered how fun they were.
Oh, dude, please, if there's like a Jewish deli owner with a heart
of gold.
Oh,
you want to be in one?
I'll be in all of them.
Oh, great.
Come
okay.
on, man.
The next one I bought, it's so funny, I actually went on, you can buy anything on Amazon.
Oh, yeah.
And I bought this. What I needed was it looked like a giant squirt, you know, like someone splatted or threw like a hot chocolate at a wall.
Yeah.
And so the next one is going to be, hi, Ernie Chiles here with the amazing new shit stain. Tired of having bare empty walls with no artwork? How about a shit stain? Tired of birds flying into your windows? Put up a shit stain. They'll never crash into the glass ever. So just stuff
we
like
got
to
get toy birds and somehow manipulating them about to fly in and then seeing it and then stopping and turning around.
Yeah, no, that's
dude, that's so fucking funny. Is this guy inspired from, you know how they always say like people, certain characters they pull from at least, like Dana Carvey's Garth is, you know, his brother Brad, more or less.
No, it was kind of a mishmash of like all these guys I saw growing up as a kid, you know, the cheesy used car salesman and the late night commercials. And the character actually, Ernie Chiles, came from when the Bare Naked Ladies were at the peak of their fame.
Yep.
They did like as a joke for their next album, they did like a half hour mockumentary, and they asked me to come and play like the host of the thing, and I just didn't want to do me, so I created Ernie Chiles, and I did that whole thing with the band, and it was so fun. When I did a sketch show, I brought him back. And
that's amazing.
Yeah, so
the wig is just classic.
Yeah,
it's
so cheesy.
I feel like the voice, the wig, I mean, you tell me, but like if any sketch stuff I've done or character work, obviously like I know there's some people, you know, who talk about like the way the person walks is the first thing they need to figure out. But for a goof like that, I feel like as soon as you look at yourself in the mirror with that different set of facial hair or hair on top,
yeah,
that kind of can kind of fuel and dictate what yeah. you're going to sound like vocally, right?
Yeah, and physically. I mean, this guy, when you watch him walk, he has a real sense of purpose. He comes out sort of aggressively and hits his mark, and he's kind of real matter of fact. So, yeah, that's the beauty of acting. I mean, I've done a number of movies where I had to, you know, dress up in drag and be a woman.
Yes.
And the beauty of it is, I tell you, when, you know, you're sitting there going, how do I find this character? And as soon as you are in full regalia, like in pantyhose and a dress mm-hmm. and a bra, and when they start putting the makeup and the wig on, the character, for me at least, just finds me. Because, you know, have you ever gone to a wedding and you put on a tuxedo
yeah.
and you've got the cummerbund and all of a sudden you sort of feel like a different guy? You feel like James Bond yeah. almost. Like you become very, that first like 20 minutes you're wearing it, you feel like a supermodel. Even if we're not good looking or whatever, you feel like a million bucks. Like
yeah.
it changes your kind of energy and who you are and how you carry yourself. And when you dress up like in full drag with everything, you just for me, the characters just find me. I mean, that happens with most of my movies.
Yeah.
People always say, how do you prepare? And I usually let the characters find me, to be honest. Once
wow.
I love it. It's such a surprise because I don't really know what they're going to be like a lot of the time. So it's really fun.
Is there somebody you'd like to, you see all these biopics getting made, like, you know, Will Smith is getting ready to do another one where he plays Venus and Serena Williams' dad.
Right.
Is there somebody, a figure that you've always just looked up to or been like, man, if I got the chance, like, I feel like I could knock that out of the park and flex my chops, you know?
You know, I wish I was good looking enough to say Jim Morrison, because I loved The Doors, and
you're perfect.
Val Kilmer knocked it over the wall, and I'm, you know, I think you got to start by having a chin, you know, which I don't have. But it's funny talking about Jim, and we're literally in the shadow of the Chateau Marmont, where he used to
yeah.
climb out on the roof and on the window ledges. But anyways, I would have loved to have been Jim Morrison. I can't. But I auditioned once for the Three Stooges movie, and it's the only movie I ever – they asked us to come in character, and I actually – sent away. I went in as Larry, you know, the guy with the spongy hair.
Yeah.
And how you doing, that guy? You know, it's like I kind of really worked on his voice, and I sort of look like him a bit.
Sure.
And I rented an old suit, like a period piece suit.
Awesome.
And I got the hat and the hair and
the Punisher hat.
Not the Punisher hat, but I went in and I really nailed it. I could tell I really surprised the producers.
Was it Farrelly, right?
It was the Farrelly yeah. brothers. I didn't get the part, but I could tell that it was one of the I knew I really kind of did a good job with it. But yeah, I don't know who else I would want to play. Let me think about it and I'll circle back.
Okay.
Maybe
Meryl Streep.
Meryl Streep. Maybe. I told you I do like dressing up like a woman.
Yeah.
So.
What was the part about in Sorority Boys? Like, that's what you're referring to, right? But you've done it.
I did two movies. I did Sorority Boys, where I was, I had to dress up like a girl. And then I did another movie that is hard to find because Disney used to do these movies called Movie of the Week.
Yeah.
And they'd play them every Sunday night on ABC. They're like family time movies. And I did a movie called Mr. Headmistress, where I'm a guy that's kind of running from some bad guys in a hideout in an all-girls boarding school.
Awesome.
Dressed as a British woman, and they think I'm the new headmistress. And so it was kind of like some very kind of my Mrs. Doubtfire type of movie.
I was just gonna say, yeah.
And no one really saw because it only aired like two times on the Movie of the Week, and then it was gone. But it was just, it was one of my favorite movies to do, believe it or not.
Holy
it was
shit.
Really, it was a great acting challenge.
Yeah.
It was a great character. It was really, I had an amazing time with it.
Do you remember the voice you would do?
Oh, hello there. Hello, girls. Would you please, look at you. Go and brush your teeth and pluck those hairs out of your nose.
Like kind of a Margaret Thatcher meets
oh, yeah.
Mickey Mouse sort of,
yeah.
type of thing. But it was great, and you know, I was surrounded by all these school kids, and then we had people playing the administration. And
yeah,
they actually found an old boarding school that had been closed down, but
to film it at.
Yeah, and this thing was probably over 100 years old, and it was really, like, it's just such a great setting. So everything felt really authentic and real. And
that was going to be my question. Like, what about the getting into the full women garb? Did you, like, what, like, did you put a tampon in and go, this feels right?
I tried. I did try. I broke the drill head off, though, and I have very hard skin.
I don't know, like lipstick or like
everything. I mean, when we did Sorority Boys, they waxed our bodies. They took all the hair off our bodies. When I did the Mr. Head Mistress, full makeup, wig, eyeshadow, blood, like it made me appreciate women. Like I didn't realize the steps that women go through when they get decked out every day. Yeah. Like not just the clothing, but the war paint on the face, the hair, yeah, the eyelashes, the eyebrow. Thing. Oh my God,
yeah, dude, we have it so easy.
We just get up and go eat Count Chocula. That's like crazy.
I was gonna say,
yeah, it's insane.
Well, you got longer hair now. Is that a little bit? Have you upped the maintenance?
No, I just put it in a pony. I just put a band around it and
I love it,
tie it off.
Have you ever had a little bun like that in the back before?
When I was first coming up in stand-up, I had, like, hair down to here. I had long hair. Yeah, yeah. And then when I moved to Hollywood, I made a concerted effort to cut it. I thought, you know, if I'm going to go to Hollywood and I'm going to get cast in movies and TV, I should probably look a little more...
castable?
Yeah, because I thought with the long hair, I'd only have a shot at...
Jim Morrison and that's it.
Yeah, I blew it. You're right. It could have been Morrison. Damn it. Kilner, you ass. Dirty.
Did you guys ever audition? Did you remember, who were those people that you remember like being in the audition rooms with that were like going in for same parts as you? You know what I'm saying?
Oh. I remember going in for, back to sketch shows for a minute. I went in for a sketch show years back. And this is the moment I kind of realized how cruel Hollywood is and how unjust. I went in for a sketch show. And I'm looking around the room, and Craig, who's the guy from The Office? Craig
Robinson.
Craig Robinson was there. I didn't really, this was pre The Office. Yeah. I didn't know. But just looking at him, I could tell he had like a kind of a humorous spirit.
Sure.
And then I'm looking around the room, and Kevin McDonald from Kids in the Hall.
Whoa.
Who at that time, they had just finished redefining the sketch comedy world. Yes. I mean, there was Second City, Saturday Night Live, and then Kids in the Hall came along. And I looked around that room and I go, how dare you? Like, this is like a sketch comedy guru. He just rewrote the book and you're making this guy audition? And I felt, I knew him. I said hi to him and I felt sad for him. I felt pissed off that they would make a guy like him jump through the hoops,
yeah,
and not just say, hey, what, you want to do this? Let's go.
Yeah.
And that's when I kind of went, wow, Hollywood, like, they don't care how you climb or mm-hmm. who you are. Like, it's just, it's a tough, cruel place, man.
They want you to go through the process and kind of, like, what, it's almost like a, you know, a power trip in a way of just, like, things can't be as easy as, like,
yeah,
you're great, you did this, we get it.
Yeah, it's just we like, know what you do, and
like, that was then. Kids in the Hall was cool, man, but let's, this is...
It's, I don't
this
know.
This is Pickle Wiggles Fuckhouse.
I think the last one I did was like a, I don't know, probably was about 6-7 years ago maybe now. Mm. And I think it's when I kind of stopped wanting to audition because it kind of broke my heart. I went into another, like a sitcom or something. I don't even, you know, one of these, when the network still had all the sitcoms. And I'm sitting there and I'm going in to read. And Kramer from Seinfeld walks in.
Yeah.
And I was so, it was such an affront to my sensibilities. I was so, and I was enraged. And here he is, he sits down and he looks so uncomfortable. And you know in his head, he's probably going, what am I doing here?
1,000%.
And I was so freaking mad that I almost walked out. Like I think even said to the receptionist, I said, that's your guy. You want funny? You want proven funny, like he's right there.
How
you
much
idiots.
More tape do you need?
Yeah, I mean, like I was just, you know, the guy did 12 seasons of the top show on television.
Yeah,
he's in television history.
Yeah,
and he's sitting here reading for a small part on Three Guys and a Baby or whatever that stupid show is. What's that stupid two young men or whatever?
Yeah,
what's it called?
Oh, Two and a Half Men.
Two and a Half Men or something. Yeah, I was just like, are you freaking kidding me, man? I was pissed. It kind of dropped my heart a little bit, and yeah. I sort of stopped going out for auditions after that. It just really bothered
took
me.
Took the fun out of it, huh?
It just made me realize it's just all kinds of things. It's like a bomb went off in my head. Like, sure. First it was Kevin McDonald, and then it was this guy, yeah. And then it just, I don't know, just cruel.
Those epiphanies, I mean, they happen when they happen, and I yeah. think it's like you either, you know, suppress it and go, this is just part of it, or you, you know, acknowledge it and allow it to be maybe a change in the way you're looking at things that's, you know, for the better, for the worse is TBD, I guess, but...
Yeah, I get it, too. I get it. It's the way things are, too, but still, it's just like, come on, you know? I don't know.
You know what I really love is, just speaking of Hollywood, you and Orny, and you know, I have had some Runyon hikes, and I think there's a different path we need to now take, because I've been seeing these videos that you and Orny yeah. stopped the Hollywood star tours.
Yeah, right.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I think I've been with you once maybe where you did stop and scream something out, and I can't remember when, because it definitely triggered a memory, but I love to do that, where it's just like, I can't be by yourself, because you need an audience. You need somebody to like either call you out or you call them out.
Right.
And Orny was, I think a couple different times, was like, oh no, you did it for Orny, saying there's Christian Slater.
Yeah.
And here's the great thing about these Hollywood star tour vans. People are so removed from this business
yeah.
that they truly, Orny looks nothing like Christian
oh,
Slater.
Oh yeah.
Maybe if you squint and he's wearing like glasses and a hat and a
yeah,
fucking muumuu.
English moors during a heavy fog.
Yeah, yeah. You're on ecstasy, you yeah. know, like maybe then
yeah.
you're like, I think I recognize that guy oh, yeah. from The Wizard. And yeah. and then he goes, hey, that's Leonardo DiCaprio to you.
Yeah.
And this was what's great is you go, hey, folks. Just sounding
yeah,
like Harlan Williams.
Try, yeah.
You don't even try. And you go, hey, folks. You go, what is this? Fuck, what did you scream? Well, you made Orny as Christian Slater go. You go, do your famous line, Christian. Yeah. You can't handle the truth.
Yeah.
And some guy does it back. And then the woman driving the bus is like, we've got a lot of people on this that love movies, and this is such a big deal. And,
yeah.
And then you're just like, Leo, do what? I mean, dude, it was just so funny. And people are looking at you guys truly like, I don't know if they don't know that you're like.
Yeah, well, I think it's like, you know, when you buy something, you want it to really work really good. Or,
yes.
you know, if you go whale watching, you want to see a whale.
Gotcha.
Or if you go to looking for Bigfoot, you want it. So they're so desperate to
have a memory,
see someone. Yeah. That they're probably willing to just disbelieve a little bit that, hey, could that? Because we usually have sunglasses and
yes.
baseball hats
yeah.
on. So I think there's elements of where they want to believe it. Or it's like these people that buy, you know, $40 million Picassos and then find out that they're frauds. But they don't take them down because, A, if they do, they're going to look like an idiot to their friends. And then when their friends come over, they can't say, hey, we've got an original Picasso on the wall. So what they do is they perpetrate the charade, and they leave the fraud paintings up. They almost want the people who told them it's a fraud to go away because it kind of bursts their bubble.
Yeah.
And so I think these people on these star tours are like, hey, we paid $60 to see Tom Hanks cutting his grass. Well, if we can't have him, there's Leonardo DiCaprio yelling at us like an idiot on the side of Mulholland
Drive. Yelling
at
Orny Adams' Christian Slater impression.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so funny.
It's fun. We have a blast. You know, the real humiliation, you said you can't do it alone.
Yeah.
I actually did it alone once. This was years before. This was when I was a little more on the hot sheet, when I was doing a lot of movies
and
stuff.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And, you know, when you live in Hollywood, you drive past these star vans all the time. Excuse me. And I used to have a convertible. And I thought, you know what, I got to see what happens. You know, so I was in the convertible and I pulled up at a red light beside a packed Hollywood star tour van. And I thought, I'm going to see what happens. So I look over and I honk the horn. I go, hey. You guys seen any celebrities yet? You know, thinking
yeah, great.
Someone would go, hey, yeah, that's the guy. Yeah. And then someone just looked at me and go, no. And then they drove away. I was so
oh,
mortified.
Dagger.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you follow him to the next stoplight? Are you guys sure? There's plenty around
here. Yeah. You haven't seen Rocketman around, have you? But I'll never forget on that same note, I was telling Orny this the other day. You know, I used to tour with Jim Carrey back when he was still doing stand-up.
Yeah.
And he was a star in his own right from In Living Color and everything. He still hadn't done all the big movies yet, but we were in Atlanta once in a limo, and we were driving along, and we came to a stoplight, and there was cars on every side, and there was an SUV beside us with a family in it. There's a whole bunch of kids and the parents, and Jim just says, I got to do this. And he hit the power window, and the window went down, and it was summertime, so they had their windows open, and he just looked at them, and he goes, hi, I'm Jim Carrey. And they all looked over, and they freaked the hell out. And then he just did the window right up, and we drove away. And I was like,
oh,
my
God.
It was so great. Yeah, it was so funny to see him do that.
That's such, like, yeah, dude, that's an amazing thing to be there for, yeah. Live in the flesh. And also, like, a cool, I don't know, like, that's a great example of you just not taking yourself too seriously.
Yeah.
And you're also, though, very aware of, like, I can do this fun thing that's fun for us that's so simple. And truly, like, those people probably still talk about that.
Yeah, it was a thrill for them. I mean, you know, even as actors, you know, living in Hollywood, if Jack Nicholson did that to me out here on Sunset Boulevard, I'd flip out, you know. I remember driving actually here on Sunset. I think it was the night of the Oscars one year. Mm. And I was just, like, at the light over here, like, where the McDonald's is.
Yeah.
And the light turned red, and I pulled up, and I looked to my right. And in a tuxedo, driving beside me was Steve Martin. And I was just to see him, I was like, he didn't see me, but I saw him. I was like right there, and I was like, holy smoke. Like, it blew my mind. I was super excited, you know?
Is that like the person that you met that you never thought you'd see? You know, you all have that, like, once you get out here, I guess, it becomes a little more attainable the more you get into stuff. You're like, oh, there's a chance I could run into this person maybe at the Comedy Store or at a shoot if I get, you know, whatever. But was there somebody when you first got out here, you're like, wow, if I see that person, I know I'll have made it? Or that'll kind of, you know, insinuate that I'm truly in Hollywood? Or was Steve Martin that guy for you, I guess?
No, I think it was just all of them, because there's so many big stars. And I thought, should I get the chance to work with any of them or act with them or be around them? And then, God, when I go through the checklist of the people I've worked with, it almost blows my mind.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, I did a movie with De Niro and Hoffman and Richard Dreyfuss and Jim Carrey and Jeff Daniels and Bruce Willis and James Caan. And I mean, it just goes on and on. And I'm like, how did I, this kid from the suburbs of Toronto, how am I acting with these people? It's just a mind blower. I still kind of pinch myself. It was such a treat, like, unbelievable.
What was the Dreyfuss movie?
I did a movie called...
you were one of the kids in Mr. Holland's Opus, were you?
I was the one that got...
Say it.
Let's just say my opus hurt the next day, all right? No, it was too soon. I always thought that movie was, like, I always thought it was Mr. Holland's anus, right? It's like opus, anus.
Opus, it's, anus. It's
wasn't
right
opus and anus a comedy duo in the 50s?
Yeah, it was Laurel and Hardy,
and opus and anus.
And Opie and Anthony.
Laurel and... I did a movie called My Life in Ruins with Dreyfuss. Richard. Wow. Yeah, amazing.
Richie D, did you call him?
I didn't, no. I just, right. no. It was...
He's one of the greats. I mean, there's guys like that that you put in a category of, you know, unsung heroes that you're like, dude, you just have been in some iconic films, but you're just so...
Good.
So good.
Well, what's incredible to me, and I'm not knocking the other actors, but we had quite the ensemble cast.
Yeah,
you know, the movie was about a bunch of characters on a tour bus going through Greece. And so we all had to be there every day on that bus, because when you do a bus or a submarine, I also did a submarine movie, you always have people in the background. So everyone always had to be there. And I'll never forget it. Every time Richard... had a scene, like whether he had a solo scene or whatever, I would be right over the director's shoulder watching him, and everyone else would be gone back to their trailers. And I was like, how are you not watching this guy? How are you not learning? For like, I would study he was
good for you.
Every little inflection, just the way you could see it, you know, like Whereas, you know, a lot of people in a movie would just, like, maybe raise an eyebrow or have a little twitch or whatever. You could see that everything the guy did was just so, had a purpose, and it felt like it, I don't know, he was amazing to watch, so.
Yeah, everything felt not calculated, but it was just like he did so much that wasn't, you know, and still does, that's not on the page, right?
Yeah, and you could feel it. You could see it. Like, I wasn't sitting there going, oh, he planned that eye twitch. But it just happened, and somehow you knew it was part of his methodology. Yeah. And it was so beautiful. That's always been the real treat for me with working with some of these real actors, like, you know, James Caan.
Another one.
Yeah, I mean,
solid and just a gang and so good and everything.
Yeah, yeah, it's just it's amazing. So to answer your question, I just feel happy I get to work with any of these people. You know, it's been so cool.
Yeah, you can tell you've picked up some of the Dreyfus isms. I think people actually say you're the Richard Dreyfus of comedy.
Me? Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, I also like to make mountains out of mashed potatoes and shaving cream. And
does he do that?
Yeah, remember in Close Encounters?
Oh, yeah.
He kept making little piles that resembled that mountain where the spaceship was.
What a fucking crazy movie.
Yeah, I know. Close Encounters.
Bases loaded. Bottom of the 9, 3-2 on Ramirez. Here's the windup and the pitch by Johnson. Swung on and missed, and that's the game. Holy shit. If you bet that he was going to get a hit on that one, and you probably just lost it all, you dumb fuck. Hey, guys, Adam Ray here. Do you feel like that you're the last one out when it comes to sports betting? Like, you just don't know where to start. You don't know shit. Understanding where the market is moving, making smart bets, and having fun while you're doing it is truly the name of the game. Well, BetQL Daily, sponsored by FanDuel, is the must-listen show for sports bettors and sports fans alike. When I'm doing my sports gambling, I like to hear from the pros, the people that make it fun, and also talk to me and not down to me so I can, you know, truly have a grasp of what's going on. I want it to be relatable. I want them to connect with me so I can actually feel like I know what the fuck I'm doing. Host Joe Ostrowski, Joe Giglio, and Aaron Hawksworth serve up Wagerment, the sports talk you love, with the betting insights you need each weekday. Find out where the market is moving across all of the week's biggest sporting events. If you missed out on earlier games, don't worry. BetQL Daily has you covered there, too, with recaps from some of the biggest, most recent moments in sports. If you're just not sure where to start with your sports betting, start with BetQL Daily, presented by FanDuel. You can listen to it weekdays, 9 a.m. to noon Eastern, on Odyssey, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. Mariah Carey, Gingerbread, Santa Claus. Pervy drunk guys chasing girls into the bathroom at bars during the holiday season. Well, it's the time we all love and cherish, and I want to give a gift to my loved ones that makes them feel special and unique, just like the relationship we share, except for some of my cousins that I've never met still. That's why I'm giving everyone that I care about StoryWorth. StoryWorth is an online service that helps you and your loved ones preserve precious memories and stories for years to come. It's a thoughtful and meaningful gift that connects you to those who matter most. Every week, StoryWorth emails your relative or friend a thought-provoking question of your choice from their vast pool of possible options. Each unique prompt asks questions you've never thought to ask, like, hey, what's the bravest thing you've ever done in your life? Or if you could see into the future, what would you want to find out? After 1 year, StoryWorth will compile all your loved ones' stories, including photos, into a beautiful keepsake book that you'll be able to share and revisit for generations to come. I love photo albums. I love looking back on old pictures and reminiscing with family and friends, and this is the truly best way to do it. Reading the weekly stories helps connect you with your loved ones no matter how near or far apart they are. My dad and I FaceTime almost every day, and we're always sending each other photos and revisiting stories and talking about old memories, and this is honestly a great way to keep that all fresh and tied to the family in the best possible way. With StoryWorth, I'm giving those I love most a thoughtful personal gift from the heart and preserving their memories and stories for years to come, because that's what life is all about, making memories and sharing stories. Go to StoryWorth.com right now /ALN and save $10 on your first purchase. That's StoryWorth.com/ALN to save $10 on your first purchase and start remembering the good old days while you're living in the better days. I just made that up, but it sounds good. Love you guys. Bye.
Do you remember where you were when you saw that for the first time, or Jurassic Park or E.T.? I feel like those are all in the same boat as, like, whoa, like we're getting a glimpse of. I'll tell you real quick, Jurassic Park, first time I saw it in the theaters when it came out, I went with my dad and his 90 at the time, 2-year-old mom. First time you see the dinosaurs and Sam Neill does that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
mom right sitting behind. The way the seats were, it was me and then my dad and his mom sat right behind me. Dinosaurs, you see the first shot. She just goes, fake.
Oh, no way. Your mom?
92. My dad's mom. My grandma.
She yells fake?
Fake. I'd say 30% of the crowd laughs. Because, come on, man. The hype behind this movie is huge. And so we're all wanting, the same way you said wanting that to be Christian Slater instead of Orny Adams, we're all wanting to believe, like, whoa, these dinosaurs are real. Like, we're now getting to see it. Fake. Dude, it gets a laugh. Then she doubles down. Good. She goes, "Not real dinosaurs."
What?
I turn around. I go, "Grandma, you gotta show like everyone really wants this to be real. Yeah. Like you gotta." We
it's and obvious. Could they look any realer? It's like this brand new technology.
Yeah. This wasn't if you go to a museum, and they've got those animatronic if you're at Disneyland and you're at Pirates of the Caribbean and there's one of those guys, going like. Scream fake. I get it.
It's going to sound like a real name dropper thing, but I just spent the morning on the phone with the guy who created the T-Rex for Jurassic Park. But that's for another day.
No, that's for right now.
That's for right now.
And then we'll go to the movie that blew your mind the first time you saw it.
Okay.
How were you on the phone with him?
So, I went to animation school, right?
Yes.
And my roommate, Steve Williams... who obviously has the last name, we were roommates in college, and Steve had the foresight to recognize that animation was going to be computerized eventually. This is in the early 80s, before any computer animation had hit, but he knew it was coming. He's a smart guy, and
just knew something else was going to have to.
Yeah, I mean, we knew, we had heard it was coming, but there was nothing there yet. And so on the weekends, he would go into a community college and start kind of working on this stuff, and he would come back on Sunday night back to our condo that me and two other guys shared with him. And he go, "Guys, you got to see this. You got to see this." And we're like, "What? What?" He goes, "Oh my God, you should have seen what I did." And he'd put in a VHS tape for us. And for those of you who don't know what a VHS tape is, it's a VHS tape. Fuck off. And he'd put in a VHS tape, and there'd be like five circles on it, like a green one, a yellow one, a red one, a blue one. And we'd be like, "Okay." And then they'd start strobing. Like one would go off, another one would come on, and we go. He'd be so excited. We go, "Yeah," and he goes, "Well, this is digital." And I go, "What do you mean?" They go, "It was done like through a computer. These are digital." And we go, "So your circles that are going on and off are digital?" "Yeah, great."
Yeah,
And so we kind of goofed with them and made fun of them a bit. And then when he got out of college, he worked at this place called Oizy or Alias or something like that.
Opus Anus.
Yeah, Opus and Anus' digital animation factory. And I remember going in to see him at work. He goes, "Harry, you got to see this. You got to see this." And he showed me kind of some undulating, rippling water. And I went, "Okay." And I wasn't impressed. And then the next time I went in, he had like a slug, like a garden slug kind of moving along. And I go, "Yes." He goes, "Well, it's digital. It's not real." And I go, "Yeah, it looks digital."
Yeah.
And then the third time I went in, he had a hummingbird flying around. And I go, "Oh, this is really great footage. How'd you film this?" And he goes, "It's digital." And I went, "You got to be kidding." Like, this hummingbird looked so real. And I went, "You got me." And then next thing you know, he gets hired by ILM. And they're in the middle of production for Jurassic Park. And they're doing the dinosaurs the old Harryhausen way. Remember the old Sinbad movies where everything was the plasticine monsters? Yeah. So they'd already designed these monsters. They'd even started shooting. And Steve, on his own time, built the skeleton of the T-Rex and put it together. And they told him not to. They said, "It's not going to work. Don't do it." And so one day when the whole gang was in his office, the producers and everyone, they came to check in on some stuff. Steve thought, "You know what? I'll put my walking digital skeleton of the T-Rex up on a monitor and just play it on a loop." And so during the meeting, some of the big execs saw it and go, "What the hell is that?" And he showed them. They took it to Spielberg, and it changed movie history.
Oh, my
God. He built the whole T-Rex and Unbelievable. So from those stupid little circles to, so anyways, I was on the phone with him this morning. He just bought a new house and he was taking me on a virtual tour, and then he got attacked by velociraptors and died. But he was, but anyways, if you watch, you know, that series on Netflix, The Movies That Made Us?
Yes.
The new one with Jurassic Park, that's you'll see Steve
he's
in
featured
it.
In it.
He's featured all the way through it. Yeah,
awesome.
It's a pretty fascinating story.
Man, those are the things you never fucking think about. Who's the? Because that movie is. I mean, it's, you know, nothing without that. Without the.
I mean, it would have looked cool. It still would have had that kind of jerky. Like you would have known it was like kind of plaster scene. Like, yeah, it would have looked like, I don't know if you remember in RoboCop when that kind of robotic thing came out with all the machine guns.
Yeah, yeah.
It looked great, but in the back of your head, you're like, okay, it's stop motion. And what Steve did is he got eliminated stop motion and made fluid motion. And, you know, you could texturize and you could make the eyes glow. And, I mean, it's just, you saw it. You know, it's crazy. So, yeah.
That's
pretty wild.
That's a cool friend to have.
Yeah.
I feel like the stories that you get from that guy at like a barbecue. How do you introduce that, by the way? If you're Steve, just at like a friend's, you know, baby shower, and like, what do you do?
Yeah.
How do you fucking?
I know, it's weird. I go, created the T-Rex.
Yeah, and they go, fuck off. And you go, all right, I'm gonna leave.
Yeah.
This isn't the party for me.
I know, it's interesting. It you know, it's something that literally changed the face of film. You know, it's quite amazing.
You're changing the face of literature.
Oh, really? I am.
With your new book of short stories.
Yes.
Don't Look Under the Bed.
Yeah.
Hart, I was telling you before we sat down, man, it's like, you fucking do it all. And obviously in your stand-up and your movies and your sketches and the shows that you create, both animated and not, you know, I just knew you were a writer, but like this is a different skill set and a different like part of your what's the word I'm looking for, Bri? Part of your arsenal of just like
repertoire.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Where you know, your last book, which was sorry, help me out again.
The Things You Don't Know You Don't Know. It's a humor book,
which people should also go out and get. I like to do Michael Caine when I'm pitching my friends.
Yeah, you should do it lovely. Oh, no, that wasn't him.
Who is that?
I don't know. I think that was Leukemia.
Caine?
Leukemia Caine, yeah.
Was that your SNL audition?
Yeah, pretty much. Next.
So I was expecting it to be another humor book, which I was pumped for.
Okay.
There's another funny book from Harlan. It was like, oh great, don't look under the bed. I wonder what this is. Or even, and it's in short stories. I thought it was maybe like goof, fake ghost stories or something.
Right.
You know. And then I started reading, and I'm like, okay, this is like really. I mean, again, I'm just jaw open. How detailed? How the worlds you create? How just for lack of a better word, creative it was, and building these truly short stories out of nothing, and how invested I was immediately.
Oh wow,
that's cool.
Amazing.
And also, I'll say this: I haven't read an actual book, and I can't remember when. I've never been a reader. It was always like a forced thing on me. I've always been more of an, even when audiobooks became a thing, I was like, thank fucking God, that's how can absorb more. And I.
Yeah.
It's also, I think maybe a little ADD of always having to reread things, and I read books, and there's been a handful of like bio books I've read that that I've enjoyed, but it takes me a while.
Yeah,
but dude,
yeah.
I was locked in.
Wow,
I don't know.
Thank you.
I just was like, I couldn't stop. Maybe also knowing that it was like attainable as far as like the amount that I was going to have to absorb. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I knew I wasn't reading like a novel. I was
That's why I kind of did short stories. I didn't want to put the onus of having to invest in a whole novel, which can be great.
Yes.
But a lot of people, especially nowadays in the Instagram world, just don't seem to want to commit. So I figured a collection of short stories. Is it okay if I hold the book up?
Please.
Right there. There's the cover. Don't Look Under the Bed.
Did you design the cover?
I did. That's actually my bed. And that mask is, I bought that when I was on a journey in Nepal years ago, in the shadow of Mount Everest, to be honest. And so what I did is I propped that under my bed and put a candle behind it, and I shot that with my phone. This is the world we live in now.
So, we gonna take it?
I was just gonna pull focus on it.
Oh yeah, will you?
Yeah. It's
wait.
So funny.
Say that again. You pulled it under what?
I put it under my bed, and then I just put a candle behind the mask. It's a wooden mask. It's a beautiful mask, but it's kind of creepy. And I thought, oh, that would work great with. I thought of the title for the book before I thought of the cover concept. But
cool.
The book kind of has the story you've read already. The taxidermist is kind of a bit of a horror story.
Yeah, man.
And then the other ones aren't so much horror, but they're very kind of bizarre and,
yes,
and strange. So I thought that would work well.
I have a billion questions. Okay. A, it's a must get. I mean, we got it on the Kindle in a heartbeat. But you can get the hard copy out in stores, yeah?
Yeah, it's really cool. It's on Amazon, and yeah, then you can order from it, and they will send you the hard copy, or you can get the digital on Kindle, and it's really cool. They just send it right on out to you. So
I like that you say this. After decades of wondering if I was even a good writer or not, I decided to just finally put the stories out there and let you, the reader, decide. I write for my own enjoyment, and if what I write brings something to you, then that makes me happy as well. My stories may surprise you as they delve into some of the darker, more serious themes of life, 1,000%, which is also another thing that sucked me in. It was just like, oh man, this is like a world and scenario that I have no connection to, but yeah, I feel connected to it.
Cool.
My stories run the gamut from fiction to horror, romance to sci-fi, absurd to erotic. I love to write in as many varied genres as my imagination will take me. Your imagination is. I've had countless people ask me this, just knowing that that I'm buds with you. They're like, what is it like to be around Harland for a fucking day, for a racquetball thing, for a movie, for a bukkake party? Like, what is this guy like?
I love Greek food.
But you know what I'm saying? I'm sure you have gotten that for a while, where people just go, what's it like to be in his brain? Or like, what's, and even this, it's just like, as I'm reading, I'm like, I don't know how, where you're going to that's inspiring these stories, for lack of a better word.
Well, you know, I think there's two Harlands. There's Harland where I can just be me and be out with friends and, you know, function at a pretty normal level.
Yeah.
But it's almost like I have this other room in my head that nobody gets into but me, and that's where my comedy comes from, that's where my books come from, that's where my ideas come from. It's not like I walk around, you know, we'll hang out at the mall and go to a movie, and I don't do anything that spectacular. We have some laughs, we buy a donut, we throw lawn darts at old ladies. I don't sit there and go, hey, little, you know what I mean? Like, I kind of reserve all that special stuff and keep it, you know, stored away. And that's why I think I do things like stand up and write books and create shows, and because I want that stuff to come out, but I don't think it's appropriate just to dump it on someone. Now, that being said, I'm not opposed to throwing around some fun and silly and unique ideas when we're hanging out. I'm not like Boorsville, but I definitely don't expose everything that's in my head. And I think we're all like that, you know, especially creative people, you know, and I find sometimes, too, that the best stuff is, you know, sometimes when you let stuff out prematurely, it can sort of ruin the party. It's almost like a surprise party, but you do it too soon, and you go, I already told someone the idea. I don't really feel like writing it anymore.
Whoa.
So, or even with jokes and stuff. Like, I kind of keep the creative stuff under a rock, and I like to get it out and then let people see it.
So you've never been someone to maybe be hanging out and be like, hey, do you think this is funny? Or
no,
subtly work a bit on a pal? Or no?
I do it the opposite. The first time I did the David Letterman show, actually, I went to New York. I flew in, and it was my first time. And I was like, I don't want to release it. I don't want to let it out till the minute I'm on that stage at the Ed Sullivan Theater.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, when you go to do the Letterman show, when you had to do the Letterman show, it's not there anymore, they would make you come in like two nights early, and the producers would take you around New York to every comedy club there was.
Run your set.
And for those that don't know what that means, you have to do the exact set you're doing on Letterman for them in front of a stand-up crowd, and I just went, I'm not going to release the magic. I'm not going to open that door. So I went up and I verbally said the joke, but I didn't put anything on it. Mm. So picture an uncooked steak with no seasoning or anything, you know what I mean? And And they told, and then I said, I got to save the magic for the moment, for that exact moment. And then when I went and did Letterman, you know, according to everybody else and just my own meter, I knocked it over the wall.
Awesome.
And when I walked backstage, they go, Harlan, you killed it. They said, you have no idea we were this close to canceling you. Because I didn't show them what I had. I refused to let it out.
Even though, again, to go back to our earlier point mm-hmm. about maybe like, you know, not making someone audition, even though you already know that they've got the goods. It's like they had seen you because they booked you.
Yeah.
They knew, like, they trusted their choice. Right. Now, but they're like, but we need to see it again under our terms almost. Like around these clubs that, and then we'll give it the final okay.
Yeah, that's right. Well, no, it wasn't the final okay. What happened is that when they auditioned me for the show, I was doing my material and my thing. But when you do that show, they sit down and go, hey, let's do these jokes, and here's the order we'll do them. And so they basically want to know what they're getting,
which
kind of sucks. But in a way, it gets you really tight and like Mr. Opus and – And so I was, I ran the set that we'd agreed to and that we all wanted to do, but I just didn't do it with any pizzazz. You know, I just did it very flatly. And I said, I can't give the David Letterman set until I'm on David Letterman.
Right.
I'm not gonna put the shine on it that I know I will.
Now, real quick, is this the sign, if you're signing pizzazz at like a, is that the sign for pizzazz?
This is the sign for pizzazz.
Yes.
And this is the sign for priest touch. Have you ever been touched by a priest?
Looks like jazz fingers.
No, that's the priest touching. You will. You'll be touched.
Wait, what was that like then, going up and having to bomb then?
It was fine.
You just go, I'm not going to even give what this fully gets, so now I have to just stand up here and take the silence.
I performed my Letterman set at a 5 instead of at a 10.
Okay.
Or maybe even less sometimes. But I had that confidence. Cool. I just knew. I knew.
Wow.
And I knew that if I did it at a 10, when I went and did Letterman, all the shine would have rubbed off already. And I didn't want to let it go. There's a magic to that moment you walk out, and so
that's true artistry, man.
But I was naive. I didn't know that. You know, I was just doing it for me
because they almost canceled you.
And I didn't know that. Like they told me when I got, they go, Harlan, we were 2 seconds from canceling you. You were sucking, and I knew I was, but they never said anything. They never said, hey, you gotta show us something here.
Yeah.
Like I think they were nervous to step on my vibe, but I was naive to the point where I was just doing what I had to do to shine, you
right.
know? And so it's, looking back, it's kind of funny.
That's so, I mean, dude, taking those chances, and, you know, as long as I've known you, I feel like you've been that way, which is like, even if it's not the popular move, you know who you are, you're like, I'm gonna take these chances, I'm gonna bet on myself, I'm gonna take these chances creatively, comedically. I mean, you know, Force of Nature, your special out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
You know, Caramel Corn, the Pug special. After doing countless specials of just Harland, it's like you do things where you go, I'm going to try. I think this is going to be funny.
Yeah.
And we'll see. And but I'm going to go full balls to the wall with it and just keep creating.
Yeah.
And it's like, even if this doesn't, if this moves the needle a little bit, if it moves it a lot, it's going to like, it's moving it for me because
that's
it's
right.
fueling my creative desires
and
my and flexing that muscle in a way that I don't know, I've always dug that, and that's like you can't teach that. That's, you have to just have that, man.
I think everyone has their own artistic pathway and drive, and mine's maybe a little weirder than most, but I don't know, I'm not trying to be out there. I'm just trying to follow what my voice tells me to do, you know?
The book is, I can't recommend it enough. You give, again,
thank you.
I can, I guess. I guess I could recommend it enough, right?
Yeah.
To where you're like, all right.
Yeah, easy. Dial it back, Nacho.
Don't Look Under Your Bed, available everywhere. You dedicated it to your mom, Lorraine, your sister, Megan, and your friend, Sherry.
Yeah.
Where do I mean, I know your mom and sis and their importance in your life. Can you break it down for me why you gave those three a shout out?
Well, my mom, God rest her soul, she's dead now, but she was a writer. And the first story in the book, The Taxidermist, I actually wrote that when I was 19 in college.
Shut the fuck up.
So that's how long these stories have been not out there in the world. I've been sitting on these stories. So I wrote that when I was 19 years old in college.
Did you show it to her?
And I showed it to her. And my mother, for years, she kept kind of nudging me. She goes, Harlan, this is good. You should get this out there. You should. And here I am. I'm going to be 59 in 2 weeks. And I'm finally putting it out there. That's how long it's been sitting on the shelf.
Wow.
And so I wrote in the dedication to my mom, thank you for, you know, encouraging me and believing in it. And it always sat in the back of my head, you know. My mom never really did that with much else in my life, but for some reason that story, and what's interesting is my mom was a real kind of conservative, straight shooter woman, you know, like. And this story is sort of dark. It's like a horror story. Yeah. It's pretty kind of freaky and scary. And the fact that she kind of got behind it always made me go, it's so interesting. But she, so anyways, the residue of her saying that stuff helped me kind of always think maybe someday I'll put them out.
It's awesome.
And so I did that for her. And then the second part of it is I lacked the confidence in my writing. And this is another reason they've sat so long. And I asked my sister Megan, I said, look, I wrote all these stories, but I, you know, there's little things like maybe some of the grammar and this and that might not be perfect. Would you proofread them for me? And so she agreed to do that about a year ago. And so that was the second phase of getting them out there. And then the last phase, my friend Sherry, I wasn't really sure how to manipulate the whole getting them published on Amazon and the formatting. And she really jumped in and helped me do that. And so these three people kind of helped me finally get these books out since I was 19 years old. So, yeah.
That's what kind of a writer was your mom?
My mom was she was a travel writer to begin with, and then she got her first book out just before she died, and it's a beautiful book. I think it's called My Life at the Beaches or something, Lorraine Williams. And she wrote a book about her life as a child growing up on the shores of Lake Ontario in Toronto during the Depression when she was a little girl. And it's interesting because I wasn't close to my mom, but when I read her book, I felt closer to her than I ever had my whole life.
Wow.
It was pretty amazing, yeah.
So. Yeah, that's huge when you get that from any family member, especially a parent, especially your mom, that gives you any sort of like, oh, this is like whatever you, even at 19 like that, which is a very, I mean, I don't know what age you consider more a larger level of importance as far as like the way you're shaping your comedic sensibility.
Right.
But at 19, I feel like it's still developing.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So it's like for her to be like, and for anything you're doing creatively, to be like, oh, yeah, keep like that wasn't bad. Like that was keep like, and I'm digging that. And this is what she does, that that, you know, that carries a lot of value.
Yeah, and she kind of kept circling back to it over the years. Like she wouldn't say anything, and then like, you know, 6 years would go by. She goes, Harlan, have you ever done anything with that story about the taxidermist? So she kept kind of like bringing it up as time went by, and so
it was so good, man. There's a I don't know if this is a way things get made, but I mean obviously the way that short films can turn into features, how couldn't a short story turn into a longer bit? Because I definitely saw like,
oh wow,
so much from that that opening one, man. Yeah,
well you know, it's interesting because many of Stephen King's films come from short stories he wrote, like
Apt
Pupil and Lawnmower Man, and a lot of his short stories, Children of the Corn, a lot of those stories come from his short stories. And just by default, I think it's because I'm in movies. I'm also a filmmaker on the side. And I think in sort of through the prism of a director, a lot of my stories, I look at them when I'm done. I don't plan them this way, but I look at them when I'm done and I go, wow, each one of these could be a movie. And it's interesting. So
it's cool.
I hope one day they are, you know.
Well, I'm sure it will. And it'll be another film to add to the long list of Harlan Williams classics. I want to play a little game with you before we wrap up.
Oh, I love games.
A couple games, actually.
Oh, good.
It's one where I'm going to throw you some quotes from some Harlan Williams classic films, and you got to tell me what movie it's from. We'll add in some music here.
Oh, yummy. Is it romantic music? Or
it's going to be the soundtrack to Bleached Opus.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
The old panda eye. Right.
You sound like my old boss at Albertsons. You see the old panda eye and that one with the huge canned bajumbas?
Uh-huh.
All right, this first one. I'm 30 years old. I'm almost a grown man. What's that from?
Can I do it the way it's done in the...
Please!
I'm 30 years old. I'm almost a grown man. That's from Rocket Man.
Boom. Hey, guys. Adam Ray here for the About Last Night podcast. I am an impulse buyer. Whether I'm buying a popcorn machine for my stepdad on the internet or a Fleshlight for my 7-year-old nephew, I know most of you are probably like me and you're thinking, you know, why don't you just use incognito mode when you're searching for shit on your browser so that nobody sees your shit? Well, let me tell you, incognito mode does not hide your activity. It doesn't matter what mode you use or how many times you clear your browsing history. Your internet service provider can still see every single website you've ever visited. That's why even when I'm at home and I'm trying to go on TomHanks.com, I never go online without using ExpressVPN. It doesn't matter who your internet service provider is. ISPs in the U.S. can legally sell your info to ad companies. ExpressVPN is an app that reroutes your internet connection through their secure servers so that your ISP can't see the sites you visit. ExpressVPN also keeps all of your info secure by encrypting 100% of your data with the most powerful encryption available. Now, most of the time, I don't even realize I have ExpressVPN on. It's just running seamlessly in the background, and it's so fucking easy to use. All you got to do is tap one button, and you're protected. Boom. Get all the weird popcorn and Fleshlights you want. ExpressVPN is available on all your devices, phones, computers, even your smart TV, so there's no excuse for you to not be using it. Right now, if you want to protect your online activity today with the VPN rated number one by CNET, visit my exclusive link, expressvpn.com/ALN, and you can get 3 extra months free on a 1-year package. That's Express, ExpressVPN.com/ALN to get an extra 3 months free on a 1-year package. That's ExpressVPN.com/ALN, ExpressVPN.com/ALN to learn more. But this one, saying this to a horse. Hey girl, you hungry? And an overweight woman walks by and goes, fuck you. And then you go, I'm sorry, I was talking to the horse.
Good old Half-Baked.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Did you love playing that character?
You know, it was interesting. I had to grow into it. I turned that movie down about 10 times.
You told me this.
Because I didn't want to do a drug movie.
Yes. And be maybe pigeonholed as a stoner, right?
Not that. I wasn't a drug guy, and I didn't want to perpetrate the drug culture.
Okay.
I was very sensitive to that. But then I went, you know what? I'm acting. I'm acting as a guy who's a drug user.
Gotcha.
And they exist, so that's what acting is. So I finally talked myself into it. But the beautiful thing about that scene where I was feeding the horse is I grew up in Toronto, and when I was a kid in high school, me and all my buddies would walk downtown and hang out at a pizza parlor. Well, that scene, they shot right in front of the pizza parlor that's in the movie.
Shut the fuck up,
yeah,
dude.
That's the pizza parlor we hung. And if you could have panned to the right,
oh, yeah,
outside of the frame of the film, my best friend from high school was sitting there on my director's chair watching me act that scene out. It was surreal.
Awesome.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah, that was... You were my favorite character in that movie, and I've told you
this. Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, I've told you that many times. Oh, yeah, dude.
Oh, wow, thank you.
Just because it was like the fact that the whole story was, you know, truly based around what happened to you.
Yeah.
But also, like, there was just such a... aside from being such a likable guy, there was a smartness to the like aloofness that Kenny had.
Right.
You know what
right.
I'm saying? Like even when it was like, hey girl, you hungry? And then she's like, fuck you. You're like, hey, I was talking like, you just weren't, you know, like you just didn't skip a beat, man.
Yeah, I know. In retrospect, it was really fun. And
was the premiere nuts?
The premiere, I didn't even get to go to.
Gotcha.
I forget why. I think it, you know, I hate to say this, but it was in New York, and I was in L.A., and I think they wouldn't pay for a ticket out there for me.
Yikes.
And I just went, well, fuck you guys. Like, I'm one of the stars of the movie.
That's bonkers.
This is Paramount Pictures, and you're not going to fly me out to my own movie? Like, so I was like, fuck you. I was pissed.
What's fucked up is I remember they flew the horse out, though.
Yeah, they threw the horse out, yeah.
Sorry.
But I did go to the premiere of Mr. Holland's Opus, and that hurt. That hurt a lot. I didn't walk straight for weeks.
We'll add a cha-ching noise.
Thanks.
Check it out, guy. He's the alpha male of the store. Chicks always go after the alpha male. They're like lions, kings of the desert. And you're just a little tiny field mouse dangling in the teeth of the lion while he's banging your chick. Oh, wait a minute, box boy. You're like the little hairy nutsack on the little hairy field mouse swinging back and forth while he's banging your chick.
That's Employee of the Month, I believe.
Yeah.
With Dane Cook and Jessica Simpson.
Yep. Man.
Good times.
Okay, last one. Hey, Commander, were you ever afraid of monsters under your bed? When I was little, I used to think there was a baker under my bed.
Don't look under the bed. That's Rocket Man as well.
Amazing. Yeah, All right, last one. Approaching the bottom, sir, I can hear a couple of lobsters duking it out.
Oh, that's down Periscope.
With Kelsey Grammer.
That's right, yeah.
Underrated movie.
Yeah, that was my second movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the movie that kind of blew everything up for me, believe it or not.
Wow.
Yeah,
that cast was bonkers.
It was crazy, but it was so fun because, like I was saying earlier with the bus movie, a lot of times with a movie, you shoot a scene with another actor, and then you don't see him for 6 days, and then you shoot another. But when you're in a bus or a submarine, everyone's always in the background. So the whole cast had to be there every day for like months together, and it's such a bonding experience because you're just together for 14 hours a day, like, joking and laughing.
Oh,
and it was great.
Is Kelsey Grammer a goof?
You know, this is interesting. At the time we shot that movie, I think it was his first like big like studio movie.
Oh,
they
shit.
Were kind of like, oh, he did Fraser, he did this. This is going to be his breakout movie. But, and I'm not being gossipy, this is just fact, but at the time he was, I believe he was being charged with statutory rape.
Yikes.
He was in rehab for alcohol and who knows what else. And he had just flipped his Dodge Viper up on, I think, Mulholland. So it was really. So in other words, he was very standoffish the whole time. He was fun on set, really nice guy.
Cool.
But as soon as they yelled cut, he kind of sort of disappeared. And I think it's just because obviously the guy was going through a lot. And I'm no sour grapes, but it was. So we really didn't get to know him that well because of that, you know.
But your experience mostly with people on set, like when you're, with somebody that's, you know, especially leading the charge on the film, pretty, like, everyone's hanging, good vibe, right?
Oh,
like, kind of.
Yeah. I think the only director that really rubbed me the wrong way was the director from The Whole Nine Yards, Jonathan. He was an older British guy. And most directors just let me improv and run with it, and they can keep it or leave it or whatever. And I think he was the only director that when I started kind of doing my thing, he kind of like, Holland, let's not do that. Let's not do that. Like, he was kind of like, and I thought, well, where did that come from? And then I'll never forget the audition process. I went in to do the audition for The Whole Nine Yards, and I sat down, and there he was, and he sat across from me. He was all excited, and no director's really ever asked me this, but the first thing out of me, he goes, Holland, welcome. So, did you read the script? And I just looked at him, and I said, well, I'll be honest with you, sir. No, I didn't. And his face just fucking dropped. Like, it was like a dad told his kid it was zoo day and then said, we can't go, and he's just like... And then I read, and somehow I must have knocked it over the wall, and I got the part. But I think it might have always pissed him off, like just the look in his face. That
not only did you not read the script, you wanted to improvise words based off of words you didn't even fucking know.
Well, the improvising was on set.
Yeah,
I probably did improvise in the audition a bit because that's something I always do.
At that point, I feel like you were pretty established as somebody that's.
Yeah.
Bringing that to the table.
Yeah, and that's why it was a little bit frustrating because he wouldn't let me go there. And I thought, dude, trust me. Like, I'm bringing stuff that usually my stuff makes it into the final cut.
Well, and it's funny you say that because I have a scene. my favorite scene in movie history and from my favorite movie of all time.
Ooh.
And it just happens to be with you. And so we've talked about it, but I'd like to do it with you if you don't mind. I'm going to hand it to you.
Oh, yeah. Let me get the peepers out.
It's from
Opus
Anus 2, Even Anuser.
Is this Mr. Holland's opus? I'll die if it is. Oh, here we go. Okay.
Yeah? Yeah. Can we?
Oh, of course, okay, buddy. Great. For you.
Okay. I love you, dude. I'll play both Harry and Lloyd.
So you want me to start from the very top?
Yeah.
Okay, ready?
Yeah,
here we go.
Here we go.
Pull over!
No, it's a cardigan, but thanks for noticing!
Pull over!
What?
Pull over!
No, oh shit, no, it's a cardigan, but thanks for noticing. Oh, he did it again. Yeah! Killer boots, man!
Pull your vehicle to the side of the road. And then I get out, I walk up to them. License and registration, please. You fellas were going a little fast back there, wouldn't you say? You fellas been doing a little bit of boozing, have you, huh? Sucking back on Grandpa's old cough medicine?
No, sir.
Yeah? Well, what's that?
That's nothing, sir. Yeah, nothing.
Yeah? Well, are you aware that it's against the law to have an open alcohol container here in the state of Pennsylvania, huh? Come on! Give me that booze, you little pumpkin pie haircutted freak! Come on!
Okay, let me hand you the drink. Take that Coke there.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, I'll use the Coke.
Yeah. Sir, no! No, wait, sir, don't!
You'd keep your mouth shut if you know what's good for you, buddy.
Tic Tac, sir?
Get the hell out of here. I did the little noise out of place.
Oh, my fucking God.
That's the same noise as you do that dolphin joke.
And
I think that's where you told me that's where you got it from,
right? That's right. Yeah, that's where it came from. Yeah, I did. That's how that got into the movie.
Yeah.
The Farrelly brothers came to see me do stand-up.
Right.
And at the time, I was doing a joke about Whitney Houston when she had that hit, I Will Always Love You.
Yeah.
And her voice just gets higher and higher and higher. And I said, eventually, it just like went into a dolphin. I was like, I will always love you. You know, whale noises and everything. And then when we were shooting Dumb and Dumber, we did about 5 takes, and then, you know, Peter and Bobby come up, they go, do that whale noise, that dolphin sound. And I go, what? And they go, do it. And I go, where? They go, I don't know, just find a place for it. And so I thought, well, what does piss taste like, you know? So I did the dolphin noise.
Fucking iconic.
Yeah.
I've told you this before, we quoted that shit at school for just months after.
And
everyone tried to, it was so funny about it too, is like nobody could do that noise.
Yeah.
Which made it even cooler, because you're just like, people would go try to reenact the scene and they go, yeah, you know what it sounds like though, you know, and they just couldn't do it, and they go, we should just pull the clip up, you know.
Well, here's a little movie trivia. When I did Something About Mary, if you watch, I do the dolphin noise in that movie too, but they turned the volume off of it. So there's a scene where we're talking, and I go, yeah, see where this thing said 7-minute abs, and Ben Stiller goes, no, well, what if it's 6? And then I go, no, nobody's doing 6. And then I go, so if you watch the movie, you'll see my fate. You'll see me physically do it.
Yes.
And the Farrellys, they turned the volume off of it for some reason. I guess they didn't want the carryover from... But I saw it when I went to do ADR, and I thought, oh, I wish they had left that in.
Because
it actually worked in that movie, too. So if you're at home and you're watching Something About Mary and you want to add your own in, then that'll be a lot of fun.
It's a fun game for the kids.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to close this out. Thank you for doing that. That was...
Oh,
come
pleasure.
On, man. What a
come
treat.
On.
All right, we're going to close this out with a James Lipton Inside the Actor Studio 10-question questionnaire.
Okay.
And I'm going to play Lipton.
Oh, wow, the soup guy. I love it.
Harlan Williams here. Harlan, what is your favorite word?
My favorite word is conundrum.
Love that word.
Yeah.
As soon as I discovered what that word was, it's one of those words I actively try to use a lot.
Yeah.
To describe any sort of like predicament.
Yeah.
Or Tough call.
Yeah, it's a conundrum.
Be a great name for a
child.
Yeah.
Conundrum, dinner's ready. Fuck off. Conundrum. I said fuck off. Conundrum.
Are you on the roof again?
Fuck off. And then this is Conundrum falling off the roof. Yeah. Fuck off. They live in an apartment.
On the top floor. Harlan, what is your least favorite word?
Conundrum.
What turns you on?
Oh, I would have to say what turns me on is the ocean.
Yeah, dude, you love it.
Yeah, the energy, the smell of sea cucumber in the morning, the sea turtle placenta. Sea urchin clit, the smell of that in the morning.
What does it smell like?
Like a clit that's been slammed in a car door four or five times and swollen up like a loaf of sun-made raisin bread. Yeah.
Let me just check here. Yes, that's correct. Google ding, has ding. The exact definition down.
Bingo.
What turns you off?
Angry people, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pushy, angry people.
Yeah, no time for that.
Yeah.
We've all got our shit, but hey, man.
Yeah. People that assume they're right and try to push their right onto you and try to make you wrong.
Yes.
That I don't like.
Yes. What turns you off? Wait, that's what I just asked. Fuck me. What is your favorite curse word?
Fuck me. Wow, you nailed it.
What, what sound or noise do you love?
What is it?
What sound or noise do you love?
What sound or noise?
Yeah.
What's a sound or noise?
What
sound? Oh, what sound or noise?
I'm sorry, I can't really articulate well from beyond the grave.
Yeah, yeah. What sound or noise do I love? I love the sound of sizzling Coca-Cola on ice. Just that.
Great answer.
Yeah.
When you pour it over and it just kind of like
the sizzling.
Fresh cold ice, too.
Oh, yeah. Just
the sound it makes. What is that, a cackle or a sizzle? A little bit of both, right?
I think it's just heaven, but especially when you've just like done sports or you're just exhausted and hot
trying
and
to then get
quenched. You hear it before you put it in your mouth. It's just beautiful.
We're still talking about the Coke, right? Are we talking about the car door clit?
Ooh. I think they both fit into that exact same category. Yeah.
Good answer. Fair.
They both sizzle.
What sound or noise do you hate?
I hate, it's going to sound mean, but I hate, like, babies crying on a plane.
Oh, that's fine. That's not mean. I thought you were going to say, like, I hate Jewish guys negotiating. I was going to be like, that's mean.
No, they don't know how to negotiate. But when you're trapped on a plane with babies, and it's no fault of the baby, but
no.
I'm just saying, I hate it because you know you can't shut it off.
No.
And if you're in close proximity to it, it's torture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Even with headphones.
Yeah, it's just, and you can't be mad at anyone. You can't get away from it. But that's why it sucks, because you got to sit there, okay, a new life on this planet. What a marvel. What a little angel. Someone get me a sledgehammer. You just want that guy. Remember in the original Texas Chainsaw when Leatherface pulled open that steel door and just walked out and went clang? You wish that guy was in
that.
The back bathroom. Yeah. Just walked out.
You're like, I did not know that guy was in 23B, but thank God.
Yeah. Leatherface.
Yeah, there is. Do you ever do the turnaround? Just like, let them
you gotta,
know?
You got to. You got to give them the glare.
Yeah, you got to just
give them the glare.
Yeah.
You know, it's like.
Because some of them don't give a shit. They're like, what do you want me to do? And you're like, well, at least try to.
That's the worst part. When you have people that are just naive to the fact that there's 200 other people around and they're just like, fuck you. We don't care. Like, even pretend. Like, take some acting classes at DeVry and. You know, pretend to fucking placate everyone.
Yeah.
Oh, she's got rickets. Yeah, she's got leukemia, baby. Only has 2 days. Let her cry. It might be her last one. Okay. You
know. She's got diarrhea of the opus. Can you just cut her some slack?
Oh,
yeah.
Opus. Free Willy.
You just posted some video on the gram where you hashtag Free Willy, and you were in front of some, was it a whale watching tour? Where were you? What the fuck was that?
Oh, was it the one where I got
shot?
Did you
see Free Will?
Was it the one where I got shot in front of where I was doing the wolf calls?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, my hashtags are totally random. Okay. They don't really mean anything.
Gotcha.
I just put up whatever pops into my head. And for some reason, I think because I was near water.
Yeah.
So I just put Free Willy.
I did, because then I was hopefully, as it started and I noticed the hashtag, I was like, please, dear God, tell me an orca whale flies over Harlan's head. And
I wish.
And he just did.
Oh, that would be so good. Just to see a orca Volvo right over your face.
It's Christmas in January. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt, Harland?
You know, I've attempted singing. Like, if I could come back and do it all again, I think I'd try and be like a singer-songwriter.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. I'm not saying I'm good at it, but I would attempt it. I feel like that's something that lives within me that I've explored to a degree in this lifetime, but I love the process of constructing a song, and I love music so much that if I came back and knowing now that, you know, we only have one track,
yep.
I've done everything I've wanted to do in life, even that to a degree, but I think I'd jump in full throttle if I could come back. And
what instrument?
I would just sing.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I might try to learn guitar or something, but I just like singing and working with the musicians and constructing a song and putting the layers on it.
You crush those goddamn comedy jams.
Oh, yeah, those are fun. Yeah.
That's a close,
a
close experience to like getting a little feel of being a
well, I have a hobby band with my cousin and we
that's right.
we put together like serious songs.
Isn't there an album out?
Yeah, it's called Rattlesnake Love.
That's
on Apple. You can track it down, and you can go in and listen to about 11 of our songs.
Amazing.
And you'll see how much fun I have doing it. It's a blast. And again, they're not comedy. They're actually like most of them are love songs.
Yeah.
And so I just love tapping into that.
I love that. What profession would you not like to do?
Oh, God.
You wouldn't want to be God?
No, I'd be God. I would say Siamese twin gynecologist, because I can only handle one at a time. Yeah. Yeah. Two is overload.
Yeah, and
me.
Which one do you start with?
Yeah, that's the thing, you know?
you want to be fair.
Yeah, it's just...
You can't pick favorites.
And I only have two hands. I can't...
If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say at the pearly gates?
Oh, welcome. Because if he doesn't, I guess I'm going the other way. So
he's just on the side.
All you want to hear is welcome.
Yeah, great answer.
Yeah,
we did it.
Oh, thank you,
guys.
Buddy.
The book again.
Don't look under the bed.
I'm gonna rack that focus again for me, Bri.
Oh yeah.
Don't Look Under the Bed, available wherever you get your books.
Yeah, if you go to my website, actually, harlanwilliams.com, there's a link right on the homepage, and it'll take you right to where you need to go to pick it up if you're so inclined. And by the way, if you do pick it up, I'd love to hear your feedback, because this is a new thing for me. And,
yes.
And you saying what you said, you're actually one of the book's just out, so you're one of the first people to give me any feedback on it.
I love that.
And I like honest feedback. If it sucks, I want to hear if you like it. But thank you, and thank you for plugging it,
dude.
Buddy.
Loved, and it's just what an accomplishment to also just put out another book, and to even, you know, like, it's funny that you say like it's years later, but like to even then have that awareness to then take what you started and go, oh, let's finish it up, and like, and then get, do it all. And I'm sure once you started to get into it too, it got you excited to complete it, right? And then get excited about the cover.
Can't stop. To be honest, I was writing the last 5 pages of a new short story just before I drove down here. Like, I'm like hooked in. I love it.
Well, I love it, and I hope you do more.
Thank you.
And you're one of the best. Harlan Williams on Instagram and Twitter.
Thanks, buddy.
And you're touring?
I'm touring. I'm going to be in Raleigh, North Carolina this coming weekend.
Oh, good.
November 14th.
Okay.
Is this going to be on by then?
It'll be after that.
Okay, so I hope you had a good time seeing me. And then I guess me and you are going over to Mr. Holland's deli later for dinner,
we
right?
We are, yeah.
I hear the opus is delicious.
Green splats.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I can't. Yeah, please, let me be in the fucking shit stain sketch.
Oh,
if there's a part. Even if it's cutting to, you know what you got to have? If it's an infomercial, you got to have the people that are like.
Oh, yeah, you're in.
That talk about buying the product.
Ernie Chiles, yeah. Well, come you're on, in, dude. You know what I'm saying? You're in the shit stain one. You just got the part.
You hear that, Mom?
Yeah.
Dreams do come true. I love you, Har.
Love you, buddy. Thank you. Thanks, great doggy. To see you, man. Cheers.